Hello and welcome to the Mejlis Podcast, Radio for Europe, Radio Liberty's current affairs talk show focusing on Central Asia. I'm Bruce Panier, host of the Mejlis and author of the weekly Central Asia in Focus newsletter. It now seems long ago that Kyrgyzstan was referred to as an island of democracy in Central Asia. Under the current government, the independent media, vibrant civil society, and vocal political opposition that once set Kyrgyzstan apart from its Central Asian neighbors are all disappearing. One of Kyrgyzstan's leading investigative journalists was expelled from the country, one of the most prominent independent news outlets has been blocked, and other independent media outlets are facing problems. On October 25th, Kyrgyzstan's parliament adopted, in a first reading, a draft law on so-called foreign representatives that many have compared to Russia's foreign agent law that was used by the Russian government to shut down many of the civil society groups and independent media outlets. The bill must pass two more readings before being adopted as a law and sent to the president for signing, but the outcome seems more than certain. What is happening in Kyrgyzstan and how did the current situation develop? To discuss the legality of all this, I am joined by Jasmine Cameron, Senior Legal Advisor for Europe and Eurasia with the American Bar Association's Justice Defenders Program, and Aybek Askarbekov, Bishkek-based lawyer in the field of political and civil rights, specializing in non-commercial law. Thank you both for joining me. And Jasmine, if I could start with you. I know this is a big order for you, but can you kind of run us through what's been happening with media in the last year in Kyrgyzstan since October last year, November last year?
Yeah, sure. Thank you so much, Bruce, for having me to contribute to this discussion. Before I start, I wanted to quickly mention, being a lawyer, a quick disclaimer that my views expressed here are personal views and not the views of my employer. The Kyrgyzstan situation is very troublesome and worrisome for many of us in the international community for several reasons. First is that Kyrgyzstan, as you mentioned before, was a sort of star in Central Asia initially in the 1990s. The term you just used, island of democracy, others also refer to Kyrgyzstan earlier in the years as Switzerland of Central Asia, right? And it's very unfortunate to see such a drastic decline that's been happening in the last couple of years, specifically, as you mentioned, as regards to media and independent journalists. So what's been happening in the last couple of years is the following, is that the government is restricting activities or attempting to restrict activities of independent journalists. You mentioned the case of Bulut Timirov. The case from legal point of view is absolutely does not have any substance or legal basis to hold itself in court. Most recently, Bulut's legal team had a hearing at the Supreme Court, and it was not successful for him. There are lots of other cases, specific cases, such as you mentioned, case currently in court, civil case against Klub Media outlet, the previous pressure and previous case against Azatik. We all know that situation. There were other cases of government suppression of independent outlets, but also we've seen many new cases of bloggers popping up here and there, which is also a concerning trend. So it's not only government reaching out to sort of big anti-corruption investigative journalists and outlets, but also targeting smaller bloggers, even for example, for reposting critical video of government officials, like with the case of a young blogger, 19-year-old young blogger. Anyway, overall picture is not very positive, not only the specific cases, but also from legislative point of view. And I beg we'll be talking more about it. But government, specifically the presidential administration, came out last year in September and introduced a new draft law on mass media. Of course, the reason for this podcast is that we are going to be diving in and discussing the amendments to on foreign representatives to a couple of legislative acts. In addition to all that, I wanted to also mention about worsening human rights situation that is also relevant to this discussion is that last year, well-known cases of sort of the bunch of cases against human rights defenders, political figures, oppositions called Kempirabad cases, where over 20 people were detained based on their legal, not legal, but discussion of the potential committee to challenge the legality of that act. Act meaning when the president had an agreement with Uzbekistan to give away, to swap the Kimberabad water reserve, and in return they got another piece of land. So this all situation is very tricky from international point of view for several reasons. I probably will stop here, Bruce, but that's the initial background for the discussion.
Okay, thank you. And we're going to get into this, what you were starting on, but let me give Aybek a chance to speak a little bit. Aybek, you know, for 30 years, the independent media in Kyrgyzstan has functioned without a huge amount of problems. There have been some, certainly, but not on the scale that it's happening today. What has been happening since 2022 and in this year, from the legal point of view, that's changing the climate for trying to for independent media outlets in Kyrgyzstan?
Yeah, of course. First of all, thank you for hosting this podcast. Answering for your question, of course, Kyrgyzstan going through the big legislation changing for the past 3 years. In 2020, we changed our constitution. In 2021, we changed our constitution again, and we are now more presidential republic. In 2021, we had a big changing process. It's called big changing process. We started to change 369 laws from the audition, and most of them going to the changing. And according to this, most of the parliamentaries and most of the ministers say that we need to change the law system of Kyrgyz Republic. And according to this, we now having a really big changing in our law system, according to media, according to NGOs, according for the criminal codes and etc. For example, our lawyers was very, very tough years, because we always working on analyzing a lot of draft laws in the same time. For example, I was analyzing criminal code in the same time analyzing the draft law on NGOs and etc. So for media, it's a really big changing now, because we are waiting for the public discussions in the new law on the mass media. It's in the parliament now. And I think if this law will pass, the new legislation will pass, the registration rules will be changed for all mass media, and not only for mass media, also for the some of the medias in the internet.
Let me ask you, Aybek, follow up a little bit here. If we could talk, Jasmine had mentioned the case of Bulat Tamirov. Now, can you give me, from a legal point of view, I mean, what just happened with all that? He was in the country for a long time, reporting, doing investigative reporting. All of a sudden, this case came up. They found that he was not legally a Kyrgyz citizen and deported him. I mean, can you talk about the legal aspects of that case?
Of course, it's more about the politics things. Of course, Bulat Tamirov was a civil activist in Kyrgyzstan, made a lot of investigation on corruption in the not only some state bodies, also on the it was accordingly going for our national agency on the security, and this was might be trigger for our government to make some illegal acts according to him. So, and from the legal point, it was the violation of his civil rights, the violation of his rights, because there was no any evidences of his citizenship of Russian. And so there was no any reasons to deport him from Kyrgyzstan.
Okay, thank you. Jasmine, can you talk a little bit about Klop?
Yeah, sure. I also wanted to add a little bit to discussion about Bulat's case. We've been following very closely, and unfortunately, the case doesn't have any legal basis. Just to add to Aybek's comments, is that Bulat case initially had four charges, including the fraud of dealing with his documents, as well as the drug charges. His pro bono experts from Northwestern University, fantastic team, they submitted amicus to the Supreme Court, and unfortunately, Supreme Court did not accept their filing and wrongly stated that they should send their amicus to Ministry of Foreign Affairs which is not correct, which unfortunately goes against the international practice, where even courts, for example, in Russia, they admit third-party filings. Talking about Klub is that also very similar trend is that the government is trying to suppress activities of this outlet. Prosecutor's office sent a request to the local court asking to cease the activities of Klub based on the fact that in their charter documents, they do not have specific description of their activities as a media outlet, first. And secondly, the second basis was that their activities are very critical of the government. So the
Can I jump in 1 second? The formal name of Klub's organization is Klub Media, right?
Right, yes.
But the government saying that they didn't know it was a media organization. It's not clear that it's a media organization.
They claim that, and that's the interesting development with Klub lawyers, is that the government claims that they do not have the description in their charter documents. And so now Klub lawyers ask the court to involve Ministry of Justice as a third party in the next hearing, and the Ministry of Justice is going to sort of elaborate on that fact. Are there any other options for the organization to be, you know, stopping the activities if that's not described in their charter documents? They recently had their hearing just a couple of days ago, and the court is going to sort of ask Ministry of Justice to clarify that. I have to sort of give credit to all of the lawyers working on this case, on other cases, is that they have a very difficult task. As Aybek mentioned, that they're doing lots of analyzing of the draft laws, but also working on specific cases. The demand for this work is huge. So I wanted to sort of express a little bit of solidarity in this regard, that lawyers are doing a fantastic job, whether it's a case of Azatik, Klub, or Bolotimirov. It's tough time for them.
Okay, thank you. Okay, Aybek, let me ask you about some of the, I'm curious about the legal case of Vecherny Bishkek versus Cactus Media. You know, it was based, at least originally, it was based on Cactus reporting that Vecherny Bishkek was about to close and they were letting all their employees go. Now, clearly that didn't happen. But the case is still ongoing, even though I believe people in Cactus have admitted, okay, we had bad information from people working from Vecherny Bishkek that it was about to close. But clearly it hasn't closed, but yet the legal case is still in court. How to understand that?
Mostly it seems that they are waiting for some negotiations between these two mass medias. You know, when we are talking about the appellations, about the, we called it recording to the some mass medias, when the mass medias appeals for other mass medias for protecting their rights and bill for some, a lot of big bills for them, it's always very hard to the court to investigate these cases. So that's why it seems that mostly they are waiting for some negotiations between these two mass medias, how they will solve by each other. Maybe they will make some mediation between them.
Do you see any underhand behind this? I mean, some people have suggested that Vecherny Bishkek is owned by people who are close to government officials. Is that true?
Yeah, of course. If we'll analyze some medias, some articles in the Vecherny Bishkek, there is a lot of pro-governmental articles against NGOs, against mass media. So it seems that it is more pro-governmental structure. Because before, if you know, before in 2020s, in 2010s, in 2000, early 2000s, Vecherny Bishkek was one of the best independent mass media. So now it's not the same as was.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you. And before we leave these individual media outlets, I was wondering if anyone wanted to say anything about 24KG, because they've also had kind of a lot of problems. Not only in Kyrgyzstan, of course, Roskomnadzor, the Russian state censor, just blocked their website a couple of weeks ago. They'd already ordered Klub to be blocked. Jasmine, you have any information on what's happening with 24KG?
I don't have any specific information on that other than what we've seen in the public domain, that it was also sort of subjected to some pressures. But other than that, I don't have any details for now.
Okay, well, I'm going to have the halfway point right now because we're going to get into the heart of the conversation here in the second half, the draft law on media and the draft law on foreign representatives. So a reminder that we are talking about the Kyrgyz government's recent legal moves against independent media and others. And my guests are Aybek Askarbekov, Bishkek-based lawyer in the field of political and civil rights, specializing in non-commercial law, and Jasmine Cameron, senior legal advisor for Europe and Eurasia with the American Bar Association's Justice Defenders Program. Okay, Jasmine, I guess I'll start with you again. Let's look at the law on media. What's concerning about this?
Sure. So as I mentioned briefly in my introductory remarks, is that the president's administration came out with this new proposal of the new draft law. Overall, there are many concerns about this draft, and the civil society pushed back last year. And so the presidential administration decided to have longer talks with the stakeholders. And I believe that next week they're going to be a next discussion, public discussion initiated by ombudsman, I believe. The essence of the draft is that, like other drafts, is that the language is very vague and restrictive, creating restrictive environment. Generally, if the government is going to restrict activities of organizations or individuals, they need to make sure that the restrictive language is compliant with, you know, certain rules, that it's legal restrictions, that it's necessary, absolutely necessary to achieve goals in government policy, that it has sort of the higher purpose, meaning that it has a, in order to restrict activities, that it has to protect interests of larger public, security, health, et cetera, et cetera. So it's not the case with this draft law. Probably the most worrisome item in this draft law is the fact that all websites have to be registered with the government. Media organizations are not clearly defined. Again, the very vague and not clear language. Overall, sort of themes through this draft is that the government wants to restrict activities of any websites that maybe not even in the business of broadcasting or publishing any news. Legal experts, local legal experts, generally saying that the draft law is very inconsistent and messy. So it just, I guess, the initial draft. So there is a hope that after more work, maybe it will get to a better shape. So we'll see what will happen next week during the discussions.
I'm curious, and this is a question for both of you, but I'll start with you, Jasmine, since you were just speaking about this. You know, there was a while ago in the 90s, for instance, before internet was like as huge as it is now, but they used to do all of a sudden announce that they were going to redo tenders, bidding for broadcast frequencies for both radio and television stations. And they use that in Kyrgyzstan and other Central Asian countries too, as a way of having everyone all of a sudden have to compete for a certain frequency or a channel that they were able to do. And then they would get rid of the ones that they did, or try to keep the ones they didn't like from being able to get registered again. Do you see that kind of repeating, but now in the global net? Is that kind of what the law is aiming at in Kyrgyzstan, the changing of the media law?
Yeah, I mean, generally, the trends are very similar all throughout the world in where the sort of autocratic governments are taking over, right? That they want to control the narrative. They want to make sure that the media is compliant with the government messaging. And that's the whole idea, that the government want to put more restrictions on the media and make sure that they're in control. They want to restrict access of any foreign influence. They want to make sure that it sort of goes in line with the idea of propaganda, right? That the government wants to broadcast the messages that they're comfortable with. And that's a very dangerous trend. Again, going back to the initial arguments that Kyrgyzstan is sort of the only country in this Central Asian region in the cluster of autocratic states where there is still hope is left. And so the media, this media environment and this new draft law is unfortunately proofs that the trend is not improving.
Okay, thank you. Ibek, what about the re-registration of media outlets if this law passes? And also, what other aspects of this draft law and media catch your attention and cause you some concern about the way this law was written?
Yeah, of course. I also want to add that was a lot of some violations of rules in the draft lawmaking process. The present administration last year, when we discussed with them that these issues, they told us that they will create a working group on the draft lawmaking process of draft law on the mass media. And this working group was consist of about 50 representatives of NGOs and law experts from civil society. And they had about 5 meetings. The group of civil society, they gave to administration of president a lot of remarks, a lot of ideas on how we can improve this draft law. And they said, okay, we will do everything that you gave us. And then in the end of the working of this group, they just published the first version of this draft law. So they just create a working group just for the statistic, just for the report that they discussed these issues with civil society. So this was a real big problem. And also we should mention that some articles, it's also copyrighted from the law on media from the Russian Federation. And also the big problem is here on the registration of mass medias. We are scaring that some medias can be go through the registration, but it's not so big point. The main point was mentioned by the Jasmine that all media, all websites should register as mass media. For example, if I have non-commercial organization working with some, I don't know, maybe with some villages, and I have on my own website, I should register my website as a mass media. So this is the point.
Okay. Thank you. Is there anything else that you see in the media law, the way it's currently written, that you wanted to point out as being particularly concerning with this law?
I mean, like the whole draft law is, as I mentioned before, is very sort of inconsistent, confusing. There are a lot of parts that don't make sense. So it seems to me that it was just a draft that was patched quickly, that just is not, you know, is not a one fluid document. So I'm really hoping that with the help of civil society, with pressure from international community, that this could be a much better law than it is in current state.
Okay, let's move on to the law on the draft law on non-commercial organizations, which is also called the draft law on foreign representatives. Ibek, I'll start with you. What's the problem with this one? What's wrong with this law?
Okay. This draft law has a really long story, about 10 years. In September 2013, our parliament also tried to push this draft law, but that time it was called the draft law on foreign agents. But at that time, our parliament rejected the draft law in the third reading. And last year in November, member of parliament, they introduced for public discussion the draft law, and the text of which was similar to the text of previous draft law introduced in 2013, a part of the concept of foreign agent. They just changed, replaced by the foreign representatives. And also this draft law is a copy, 99% copy of the Russian law on foreign agents. This draft law was withdrawn as a law of the Kyrgyz Republic on state registration of legal entities. And these new amendments, this new draft law consists of amendments to the two law of Kyrgyz Republic. It's a law of non-commercial organizations and the criminal code of the Kyrgyz Republic. So we are deeply concerned about this draft law because it will impact on the activities of many civil society organizations operating in the country, and that risk violating fundamental rights on the freedom of expression and freedom of association because this draft law provides for criminal liability and imprisonment for up 10 years for active participating in or support of nonprofit organizations, the activities of which are concerned as inducing citizens to refuse to perform civil duties or to commit other illegal acts. So it's clearly we can't understand what does it mean inducing citizens to refuse to perform their civil duties. And this crime is vague, broad, and subject to subjective interpretation. This offense may result in selective prosecution of legitimate some human rights activities. And also, this draft law gives to the Ministry of Justice broad powers to conduct unscheduled inspections of premises, audit activities, and obtain some documentations. And also the main problem on this draft law that it's engage so-called like political activities and receive funds of other property from foreign source, and you will registered as a foreign representative. So failure to comply with this requirement may result in suspension of their activities for up to 6 months without a court decision. So there is some main problems of this draft law.
All right, thanks. Jasmine, I'd like to get your thoughts on this law.
Yeah, sure. I did pretty much outline all the major concerns that it's restrictive amendments, obviously. The government wants to control and specifically selectively prosecute the NGOs that are receiving any foreign funding. It's, again, it selectively will be applied only to a certain number of NGOs. For example, commercial organizations as well as state entities do receive funding as well, but it's not going to be subjected by this law, obviously. From international point of view, it's sort of threatens the fundamental rights and also questions Kyrgyzstan's commitments, international commitments and obligations that Kyrgyzstan took upon itself. For example, currently Kyrgyzstan is a member of Human Rights Council that was chosen for the period of 2 years from this year to 2025. And as such, Kyrgyzstan makes pledge to make sure that it's compliant with, proper human rights standards. Another example is that Kyrgyzstan currently is receiving EU's generalized scheme of preferences, GSP, and under which Kyrgyzstan is allowed tax-free and no tariffs export over 6,200 products to EU. This all comes with responsibility, right? If Kyrgyzstan wants to be an equal member of international community, then Kyrgyzstan obviously has to be sort of cognizant and compliant with international standards. So with this law, it's obviously that if Kyrgyzstan adopts it in the next hearings, it's obviously that these commitments are going to be violated. The international response was very sort of robust and proactive. Once the hearing took place 2 days ago, there is a big concern in the international community, specifically, again, that Kyrgyzstan is going to be sort of violating those commitments.
Okay, thank you. Staying with this law, but first I'm going to separate this into media that's receiving foreign funding, and then civil society or what we would really consider to be NGOs that help with a lot of social needs in the country. But again, I want to start with media and come back to you, Jasmine. The case of Asatik, which there was court ruling that temporarily blocked Asatik media from having its stuff put up on the web in Kyrgyzstan. Now they've managed to settle that, but that was before this draft law on foreign representatives is coming into effect. What for an organization like Asatik, not specifically Asatik, but for an organization like Asatik that obviously receives foreign funding, what is about to change for them? I mean, what are the new obstacles that they have to be looking out for if this law is adopted?
Well, that's the question, Bruce, right? Then when we saw the court ruling that Asatik was sort of off the hook, the initial question that sprang to my mind was for how long, right? That in the environment where rule of law is not sort of respected. It's just a matter of time when the government is going to push on those levers again. And it's all, sadly, unfortunately, it's not just the legal basis of these decisions of this case. It's all sort of involved behind the scene political games, right? If, for example, the Kyrgyz government wants to have an agreement with the U.S. again to revive the bilateral agreement, then it's going to be a new lever of the pressure, new leverage to push. Yes, I guess it certainly put not only Azatik but other outlets under threat if this law is going to be adopted, because the main intent of the law is not only to be registered in the Ministry of Justice database, right? The main intent of the law is to have ability to control the activities of the organizations. That's why the Ministry of Justice will have such a broad powers under this law, and the definitions of political activities, as I mentioned, are very vague, that it could be advocating or lobbying the government, influencing the government of the political decisions, which means that the government can interpret it in any way it wants, right? So there is a danger, obviously, for outlets like Azatik and all others should this law going to be adopted. That's why it's so important now for the donor organizations, for international communities to push back on Kyrgyz government to make sure that the law is not adopted, because once it's adopted, it's going to be very hard to sort of walk back. So that's basically kind of like a larger picture, larger concern with this law.
Uh-huh. I would like to get your comments on this also. And then if you want, you can start moving into what other organizations — we're talking about media all the time here — but what other organizations would be affected by this? If there was someone helping out with AIDS education, women's education, or you know, something about women's rights, things like that. Are those organizations in danger too of possibly being targeted by the government?
Yeah, I also want to add some comments for your previous question about Azatik. So this law just includes only three types of non-commercial organizations. It's public funds, public associations, and public institutions. So in the case of Azatik, if they will register as a mass media, not as a public fund, they will not influenced by this law. But of course, there will be some problems finding some fundings. For example, a lot of our like independent mass medias, they are working with some international donors, international organizations, so it will be maybe tough to get the fundings. But according to mass medias, if they are not registered, for example, as an NGO, as a non-commercial organization, that they will not influenced by this law. But for example, in the case of Klop Media, which was created as a public fund, I think it will be targeted very, very hard by this law. So, and also answering for your question, the main problem of this law is that they include the idea of political activities. So if non-profit organization is recognized as participating in political activities carried out on the territory of Kyrgyz Republic, regardless of the goal and objective specified in the constituted documents, is the documents when you registering documents when you get through the registration from the Ministry of Justice, and it participates in organizing and conducting political actions in order to influence in the adoption of decisions by government bodies aimed and changing the state policy pursued by them. So, for example, I am a member of non-governmental organizations which work on the women's rights or working with education, civil education, and they are starting. Our parliamentary starts make some draft law on the maybe again foreign agents, and I want to make some peaceful protests in the square, main square. It will be maybe called as a political activities, and it doesn't matter Are you working with children? Are you working with some vulnerable groups? It doesn't matter if you are making some political activities which will influence on the decision of a government. You will be called as a foreign agent, foreign representative, and you will take some punishment, criminal punishment. As there is the main point of the main issue of this law.
Let me ask you, since you're a lawyer and you are in Kyrgyzstan, and we know that there's been some groups that have been calling for the United States and the European Union to cancel visa privileges for deputies who support this law on foreign representatives. Now, one of the authors of that draft law is Nadira Narmatova, and she called for the security service to find out who is making these appeals to the United States and the European Union and to punish them. Legally, is that, where does that leave us? It doesn't sound like that's should be legal.
Yeah, of course. First of all, it's illegal. We can call it political persecution, of course, because they don't have any power to investigate who starts this, these activities for banning the visa process from the deputies. You know, it seems that Nadira Narmatova is really afraid of this situation because, according to the international law, ambassadors and other political embassies, they have own right to give or not to give the visas for any reason. So that's why Nadira Narmatova go through their power and ask the national security to investigate this issue, but they can't do this. But anyway, they can investigate it, and we can call it just the political persecution of people who just express their opinion.
Okay, thanks. And we are coming up to the
news.
Yeah, go ahead, Jasmine.
Sorry, if I can just add a couple of things. It's a very good, valid question about visa restrictions. And I think civil society in Kyrgyzstan is correct in reviving this discussion that overall is that international community as well as local civil society should be able to call on the bad actors. And the idea is that so you cannot have the cake and eat it too, right? If you are voting to restrict any NGOs that are receiving foreign funding, then you should be true to your words, and you're not able to receive benefits of the Western and have access to the Western foreign systems as well. There was an interesting report, local report, video report, where they were asking local MPs for their reaction about this call on visa restrictions. And many of them admitted that they have family and kids and travels all going to UK and US. So it just makes sense for the civil society to use all possible tools that are available to sort of put them on the spot, make sure that they are compliant with international standards. And if needed, those tools of that international standards also have in their box that they could be used. And what's interesting is that those systems are in place, is that State Department in the past used visa restrictions in situation, for example, with Bangladesh, and there were a couple of interviews with sanctions experts and visa restriction experts in the U.S. where they were able to use these systems again to prevent bad actors from violating the laws. So again, if I have an opportunity to speak a little bit, Bruce, here about sort of the dangers with this law and this general decline in Kyrgyzstan for the international community, is that we have to be standing up and speaking up now before it's too late. Not only because Kyrgyzstan would violate international standards, but also in this changing environment, geopolitical changing environment, it's really important for Kyrgyzstan and country in the region to sort of remain more or less a free country that would allow sort of for free environment for NGOs to work, for the citizens to exercise their rights. And I would also encourage international institutions, financial institutions, to seriously rethink their approach to providing aid and possibly putting conditions on those funds and aid if countries like Kyrgyzstan governments, more autocratic governments, are not complying with those conditions. I know I jumped to recommendations and call for the international community, but I wanted to make sure that we're including this in this discussion.
No, that's fine. And I'm going to come back to you because this is time for final comments. So I'll start with you, and I'll let Ibek have the last word. But let me just throw in something. If these two laws do pass, the law on media, the law on non-commercial organizations, do the people and organizations working in Kyrgyzstan really have any legal protection at all? Or is this, are we going to be in the situation where if you cross the government, they can kind of make up the law or interpret the law they want and get rid of you or silence you?
Oh, absolutely. And sadly, the environment now in Kyrgyzstan is very dangerous, so to say, right? There were many sort of retaliatory acts. And give you an example that right after the conference in Warsaw earlier in October, there were a bunch of comments that were very negative and threatening to the participants at the conference. And it's not only coming from the government, but also the government supports the third parties, sort of trolls and, you know, provides environment for bots to create this threatening environment for the human rights defenders, journalists. So there is a environment where human rights defenders, activists are nervous and I wouldn't say scared, but feel uneasy to speak up. And obviously the legislative basis, having laws and protections on the paper, is just a little part of how the rights are protected, right? It's all about implementation and political will in the governments. For example, going back to those Kempi Rabat cases, all of those cases simply do not have legal basis according to analysis of local experts. But nevertheless, all of those cases are still pending, right? So it doesn't matter what standards they're applying, as long as the cases are sensitive, political, government is going to continue with their repressive practices. So that's the sad situation, what's happening now.
Okay, thank you. I bet you get the last word. What kind of protection do people and organizations have if these laws go through?
Mm-hmm. Of course, as Jasmine said, the main idea of this law is, of course, that all non-commercial organizations will struggle, and it's a big problem on interpretation on these issues. And if we are talking about the protection of civil society, if this draft law will pass, it will be very, very hard, because first of all, the main target of our government will be the human rights defender organizations, which works with the vulnerable groups in Kyrgyzstan. The interpretation of the world's political activities will be very, very, very long, and we can interrupt for any actions of any non-governmental organizations on the field of human rights. We can interrupt as a political action, and we can close these organizations first. And so that's why now we are working on the making some amendments to this draft law, with working with deputies and other decision makers to make some kind of change this draft law, make more softer than we have now. So that's why it's very useful now for civil society to make some union and go together to fight against this draft law. And also, first of all, civil society asking help from the international organization and international community to make some awareness on this draft law. So I think if civil society push the decision makers, and maybe some international community will push, maybe we will win on this situation. But of course, this law is go from the first readings, and we are waiting for the second readings in the parliament, and we will see what the results will be after second readings. So this is, I think, the main point now.
Well, we've come to the end of our show. So thank you, Jasmine, and thank you, Ibek, for being on the program. And a big thank you, as always, to Nathan Shoemaker, our Mezhlis podcast producer in Washington, D.C. And a reminder, you can subscribe to the Mezhlis podcast or the Central Asia in Focus newsletter by visiting Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's website at rfarl.org. Thanks, and we'll be back next week. Bye-bye.